Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We are here today in the studio. Sitting in on the left is Representative Angela Romero. She's sitting in for Senator Jim DeBacchus. Welcome, Angela.
Thank you.
Nice to have you. And on the right, sitting in for Representative Dan McKay, is Senator Jake Anderegg.
Thank you.
Nice to have you, Senator.
It's good to be here.
Our producer told me, she said, you know, I'm bringing in Angela and Jake, and they're really good friends. And I thought, wow, okay, so it's Republican, Democrat, House, Senate, suburbs, city. So tell us a little bit about who you represent and how you guys have such a great friendship.
Well, Senator Andrick and I came in together in 2012 when he was in the House of Representatives. I was the only newly elected Democrat, so there were 21 of us that came into the House, and it was me and 20 Republicans.
I got close to
the Lieutenant Governor, Spencer Cox, was
as
in
well.
Our class. So Jake and Spence looked out for me.
Very good. And you represent?
I represent downtown Salt Lake, okay. The west side of Salt Lake, a little bit of Magna, and a little bit of West Valley.
And Jake, in your case, Lehigh, if I'm not mistaken, is that right?
Yeah.
Lehigh area?
It's a little, Lehigh, most of Lehigh, some of American Fork, Highland, Saratoga Springs, Eagle Mountain, and about a third of Harriman.
Yeah, okay.
Cedar Ford as well, so.
So typically we have Dan and Jim in here. They're very colorful. you guys want to say anything about our other co-hosts? They're pointing at each other.
You know, as much as I don't agree with Senator DeBacchus, I really like him.
Yeah, good man.
He's a good man, and it was touching to see his farewell speech. And he came in, talked to our close caucus, and basically said, you know what, thank you for being decent and respectful and kind. And
yeah,
it was
that's
really
great.
Good. He's a good man.
Angela, I bet you and Dan don't vote a lot alike. Am I right or wrong on that?
Probably not. Dan's a funny guy.
I hope he'll be listening.
She's holding back.
But Senator DeBacchus is larger than life. He's the life of the party. And so he's my senator. Whenever I have to present after him, I'm like, why did you let him go first?
Yeah. That's how Dan feels about when we do gripes. Hey,
you know, so it is interesting because we always say in the Senate, if you tie his hands down to his sides, he couldn't speak.
He doesn't do it as well.
No,
yeah,
he
yeah. Hey, so we are, you know, several days out from the legislative session, but I just tell you, I'm someone who's been an active and passive observer of the legislature for about 32 years. I worked for 3 different governors, so I spent a lot of time up on Capitol Hill, but I've never seen, I'm struggling to find a more impactful session.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
stunned at what you all accomplished. And
it was big. It was a heavy
you guys both, you're both nodding. I mean, it was Medicaid expansion. It was tax modernization. It was money for, you know, schools. It was governance for UT. I mean, all of those are really hard things. So just would love to hear your commentary. Is that how you feel it? Did it feel like this really banner session as you were living it?
It was exhausting.
Was it?
This
yeah.
session really exhausted me. And 3 of my bills got stuck on the second reading calendar in the Senate and died because there was just so much going on. And so it was a little frustrating on my end because there was a couple of them that I really wanted to pass because we needed them for this upcoming year.
Human trafficking. We needed that one.
Yeah.
Was her Senate sponsor. So.
Yeah.
But I think the most difficult for me was the just the last 2 days and just rushing things and not being able to really examine everything and voting no because I can't vote for something if I don't know what's in there.
Yeah.
You can't rush something.
Jake, did it exhaust you as well?
It was tiring. We passed tax reform, 3 separate bills that completely changed, you know, and that was needed because, you know, when we lowered the income tax from 6% down to 5% about 13 years ago, it left a shortage. Mm-hmm. And we've been stealing from the general fund, which the general fund itself is a shrinking pot. And we've been stealing over $100 million a year for education. And we needed to stabilize it. And quite literally, the last 11 legislators had kicked the can and punted. They've kicked the can down the
road.
And
I always say when you kick the cans, they just pile up.
And it does.
It's not an endless road. They're just piling.
And, Lehigh is a pretty conservative area. So I had a lot of constituents that were upset with my, you know, I voted for a tax increase and turned around and said, heck yeah, I did. Because if I didn't do it this year, it was going to pile up even more. And we were going to spend a heck of a lot more money down the road.
Yeah. So we've had an unbelievable amount of legislators and very visible legislators announce their retirement. I think the number's up to like 21. I'm just adding that. But so we have both the Speaker of the House, Greg Hughes, and the President of the Senate, Wayne Niederhauser, both saying not only will they not seek, you know, the leadership position, but they're not even going to run for reelection. I want to hear your reaction to that. And some of us have just wondered, did we just poop everybody out? Because you have to balance your, you know, your family lives, your work lives with this part-time, so-called part-time legislative work.
We need to not call it part-time because it will suck every last minute of your life away if you allow it. Mm-hmm. So I have to set very, very strict parameters so that I can be productive and be a provider for my home. But I mean, quite literally, it is exhausting. And so I think they both put in a great amount of effort and time. And this legislative session where we culminated with major tax reform, major transportation reform, you know, Medicaid expansion, it was a heavy, heavy lift. I think afterwards we were all like, I just need to decompress for a month, you know. And you go right from that into needing to file if you're up for reelection. And that's hard sometimes, daunting.
Scares people away. Angela, how would you comment on the turnover?
I'm not shocked. You know, we work a lot. I think people assume that we make the big bucks and we don't. And we're in session 45 days, but we're also in interim and we're also in community meetings. And we know when we run for office that we're giving our time to the people. And a lot of people sometimes think they know what that is, but it takes a lot of time because you want to be committed and you want to create change and you want to do the best you can for your constituents. And sometimes you lose that life in you to keep on fighting. So I think that's why some people tend to leave. For me, I still have a lot I want to accomplish, and so I have to keep that fight up.
Keep it up, yeah. So one of the big things that everybody's trying to understand of what happened behind the scenes, but you all figured out how to negotiate with Our Schools Now and get in front of a initiative petition that would have raised our income and sales taxes, potentially hurt our economic competitiveness as a state, but we needed money for education. Can you share with us any of the details of how you figured out how to reach a compromise with the Our Schools Now folks? They're both smiling at each other. How did this happen? Because just to break it down, I mean, you've got on the ballot a 10-cent motor fuel tax increase in the fall. That was part of the negotiations. You basically did a property tax increase. But you also did a couple of tax cuts. So a lot of tax modernization. But how did this happen?
You know, I think that we were all looking at the same polls. And the reality is I don't think that they had the support to get it passed on the ballot. And so they started to be open to having the conversation. And quite literally, we were having the conversations behind the scenes just to say, we have got to stabilize our revenue streams for schools.
Interesting. So you had a common interest.
Yeah.
But I also think it's important for us as elected officials to be put on notice. Why do we have so many people wanting to do ballot initiatives? Obviously, we as elected officials are not listening enough to the people who elect us. And so I'm hoping all those individuals out there who are interested in these ballot initiatives take the time, go out there and vote. Because I think that's really important, because I don't know a clearer message than to maybe, even if that's me, vote us out if they don't feel like we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. And I think the initiative, Our Schools Now, they're like, hey, what's going on with our education? We need to do something about it.
Yeah.
Really. I think they were also a little concerned about if it did fail on the ballot, that was almost like a mandate from the people. Hey, don't touch the income tax. And we didn't necessarily think that was right either.
Yeah. We have just under a minute left in this segment. I want to just ask your feedback on what happened with this Martha Hughes Cannon statue.
It was awesome.
You guys both support that?
I did, and I convinced Mike Noel to vote for that, and that took time. I would leave him notes on his desk every day. I would leave yellow flowers on his desk, and I would text him, and
This is what you learn on both sides of the aisle, some of the behind the scenes. Angela Romero working on Mike Noel on the Martha Hughes Gannon statue.
He said he wasn't going to vote for it, and he did.
That's great. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm with Senator Jake Anderegg and Representative Angela Romero. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Inland Port.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more of our in-house podcasts, visit kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to keep local programming alive on KCPW.
This is Angela Romero on the left.
And this is Senator Jake Anderegg on the tinfoil hat wearing right.
and Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I mentioned that we were going to talk about the Inland Port, and I want to go right to you, Angela, because I don't know, is this right in your district? Do you have the Northwest Quadrant, or is it not quite?
That's Representative Holland's district, but,
okay,
it,
but you
I
neighbor
am
it
a neighboring district, and I also have to disclosure, I work for Salt Lake City Corporation.
Yeah, okay. So with those that information, tell us what the legislature did and then your feelings about it.
I was very disappointed on how that was handled. It came last minute. There was an amendment put on the bill. And in the House, there maybe three people were allowed to talk, and then someone called a call to question. And what that does is it kills all conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't really able, in my opinion, to have an honest conversation about the Inland Port and how it impacts Salt Lake City and the citizens of Salt Lake City, because I know my constituents and Representative Holland's constituents really felt like this was a land grab.
Mm-hmm.
And they really felt like their voice was left out of the process.
Interesting. Sandra, how about in your body and from the Republican side?
You know, it was, you know, Jerry Stevenson, Senator Stevenson's bill that originally came through my committee. So I'm the chair of the
Economic Development.
So we heard it, and Mayor Biskupski came in, and I gave her and everybody who wanted to speak enough time. And that version of the bill we all voted for, and Salt Lake City spoke against that version of the bill. But then when it was substituted in the House with the final version, I think it was substitute number four, they all came running saying, hey, no, we want what we originally had, even though they were speaking against it. I guess at the end of the day, there were more than just Salt Lake City vested in this. When we've spent not only what we spent over $400 million for the prison, but an additional $125 million for increasing the lines for the infrastructure and the sewer and whatnot, There was going to be more than just Salt Lake City that wanted to have a say on how it was done out there. That being said, this does set, I think, a tough precedent.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have seen a little bit more collaboration, but I understand that, especially on my side of the aisle, there's a keen interest on how that's developed out there, and kind of a sense that Salt Lake City wasn't moving fast enough or mm-hmm. in the right direction, given the sense that people had interest on how it was done.
What happens next? And you know, I mean, I'm guessing, I think Governor Herbert has expressed that he will sign this. Is that what you're hearing?
That's what we're hearing. Yeah, Salt Lake City has asked for the mayor, the city council, and the Salt Lake County Council have asked for a veto. They really feel like this is unfair to Salt Lake City. And I'm glad our Salt Lake County Council is standing by Salt Lake City on this. And there's just a lot of unanswered questions on how this quasi-government's going to work. How's it going to be accountable? And for me, a bigger issue is the environmental impacts. I mean, when we're talking even about the prison, what about the landfill right by the airport? How do we know that's not leaking into groundwater? I mean, there's so many what ifs. And so I think we moved a little bit too fast.
Hmm. Yeah, the environmental issues are certainly a concern, but those exist regardless of what we do there. I mean, those landfills have to be, we've got to address that regardless. So,
okay, we've got to talk about UTA, and I'll do the TDU, Transit District, Utah. Jake, what are they thinking?
Well, I was actually heavily involved with Senator Harper on this. I actually made the presentation to the Transportation Task Force back in June of last year saying, you know, if you're going to do regovernance restructuring, this is how.
A new chapter.
And the concern was raised at that time. I raised the concern at that time of taking, you know, on the obligation of the $2.1 billion of debt. But at the end of the day, there are some interested parties out there that want to come in and compete with UTA for transit services. And so the name Utah Transit Authority implies that they oversee all transit within the state. And the reality is going forward with the competitive aspect of the regovernance restructure, that's not the case. So I was in favor of mm-hmm. rechanging its name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I liked what we came up with, but I will say this, though. We're not going to spend $50 million in rebranding everything, because they're not going to until they repurpose the equipment and they buy new equipment. When they buy new equipment, they buy it rebranded. So they're not going to spend
any more
money.
Sometimes the public message gets away from the truth a little bit.
Yeah.
Angela, let's hear your comments on it. And then I also wanted to just ask about the governance, specifically the board. But
For me, I was supportive of the bill. I didn't like the EV charges, and I expressed that to my constituents.
So this is like the quadrupling of the registration fees
exactly.
for electric vehicles.
And I didn't like that, and I wish that wouldn't have been part of the package. But this was a conversation that we had members have over the summer, and just looking at transportation in general, did I think the governance, does there have to be a change at UTA? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I look at public transit even just in Salt Lake City, and to get from one side of town to the other side of town, if I was to leave Glendale, I would have to take a bus up to Salt Lake City, and then I'd have to take another bus down to Rose Park. So it would take me about an hour just to get from one point, from the one side of the west side to the other side of the west side.
Yeah.
And buses only run every half hour. I mean, if you really want to support working communities, is that really the best practice?
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, this legislation opens the doors and establishes the inevitability that the state funds will go to transit.
Yes.
Am I right? So that's a really big deal, right?
The TIF, yes.
Yeah.
So there are five different quarters. We're going to call them quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Salt Lake County and Utah County didn't adopt the fourth quarter under Prop 1. This authorized
people should think of this as like a quarter of a cent or whatever.
Right. So yeah. Well, it's a quarter of a cent on the local option sales tax, but what it actually means is 0.1 to transit, 0.1
uh-huh.
to county or city roads,
and then
two
more
0.05
in
the fourth quarter. And then they did an additional 0.1 and 0.1 for roads and transit called the fifth quarter.
It's a lot of math for both sides of the aisle, isn't it?
I told you, I was knee deep in this. And so, but the good thing is on the fifth quarter, it was open for transit, not earmarked to UTA. It was open for transit. So that opens the door for competitive funding.
Very interesting.
It also gives some local control.
It does. It goes to the counties, and the counties make that determination.
Yeah. I tell people that, I mean, I think it'll be decades before you have another speaker and president that are this transit friendly.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is another reason why this was such
a
potent session.
Well, maybe not. I mean, you kind of look down the road, and you've got potentially the leading candidate would be Brad Wilson.
He's pretty pro-transit.
And then you've got, you know, Stuart Adams potentially on the Senate side, and he was the former commissioner of the Department of Transportation.
Uh-huh.
So
he gets transportation in a big way.
They both do. Yeah, they both do.
But, you know, hopefully for me, this is not just about transit. It's about, you know, it's looking at it from all different sources. And so for me, it's about walkable communities and building dense and, you know, filling that density. And how do we ensure that people don't have to get into a single vehicle to get from point A to point B?
Yeah. Give us a little bit of the color commentary on this Mike Noel and this Donald Trump highway that caused so much consternation.
Bless his heart.
Bless his heart. And do you sit by him on the floor, Angela? Are you guys just kind of chummy?
No, Mike Noel reminds me a lot of my late grandfather. He was a cowboy, grumpy,
okay,
but had the biggest heart. But you wouldn't know that unless you really got to know the
and
person.
And that's what Mike Noel has, huh?
He has a big heart. I mean, I think a lot of people, he creates his own stereotypes. He creates his own drama. I'm not saying he doesn't. And I love you, Mikey, but you do. But at the same time, when you have honest conversations with him, he'll listen. And that man behind the scenes has helped me with legislation and help me get it out of rules and help me fund the $1.2 million for the testing of all sexual assault kits. And he would never take credit for that, but I knew he was in the background because the speaker told me he was in the mm-hmm. background pushing mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
So I think people can see one side of Mike Noel. And there's a lot of sides of Mike Noel I don't agree with, but I also know a more gentle side to him and a caring side.
And so when that bill did not get out of rules committee, it's just because it didn't have the votes, there was just going to be too much of a public outrage. Jake's smiling. He's trying to decide whether to tell the truth or not.
Honestly, that was on the House side, so I don't know what happened on the House side.
Mike felt like he had the votes. I don't feel like he had the votes. And I really didn't think it was it was a waste of our time to even be having that conversation
mm-hmm.
when we have so much
other important
matters, like my domestic violence bill that didn't get off the second reading calendar on pre-jail release. There are so many other important issues and issues that are just as important to me and to many Utah citizens as transportation.
So we have, what I've been calling a banner session, but there's things that didn't happen. And I've mostly been kind of moderating the two of you, but in representing the middle, I had two things that I wanted to see that didn't happen. One would have been a change of governance for the State Board of Education.
Yes.
And another would have been an earned income tax credit for intergenerational poverty, low-income Utahns.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't see that. It didn't make it out of the
House. It was so close.
So with that, what What are you sad that we didn't get done?
What am I sad that didn't get done?
I mean, I know you've got a couple because they were stuck on the second reading calendar.
I was disappointed. Honestly, and I don't know what happened. Maybe it was shenanigans that most of the Dems didn't vote for on the House side. They didn't vote for Inland Port. So I don't know what happened. Their bill seemed to not be coming over on the lists on the final couple of days. I don't know what happened there. But I was pretty bummed that the human trafficking bill and
the human trafficking and the
Rebecca Chavez House 319.
Yes, for the children. And
so tell our listeners what those two were.
So I had two bills in particular, and I'm going to blank out Rebecca's the title of her bill. But my two bills. One was Senator Wyler and I had brought together a group of prosecutors, defense attorneys, advocates, talking about jail release and domestic violence and dating violence, and so we revamped our whole code. And the our dating violence piece went ahead, but our jail release one didn't because it was stuck on the second reading calendar. Representative Senator Andrig and I were doing a bill on human trafficking, working with the AG's office to include vulnerable adults. There was a case where someone was trafficked and she was a vulnerable adult, so we wanted to make sure that we could penalize the individuals that trafficked her as we would penalize someone who traffics a child, because a vulnerable adult is like a child. And so that didn't go through, and that was really frustrating. Then we would have changed the term child prostitute to child participant in commercial sex. So we take that stigmatism away from children.
Yeah. I mean, that would make a lot of sense.
So those bills passed committee. They just stayed on the second reading calendar for 2 weeks, and then they suddenly disappeared.
Yeah. I don't know what happened.
Tough medicine.
But I will say this. I'd be happy to help you with those next year.
Yeah.
Very good.
If you come back.
Yes,
we'll go to gripes in just a little bit here, so get your gripes ready. But in kind of closing down sort of the recap of the session, I wanted to give each of you a chance to say something about President Niederhauser and Greg Hughes, since they're not running for reelection and have had quite a distinguished career in public service. Not sure what's up next for them, but give each of you a little time for that.
Well, you want me to go? So I actually know them both really well. You know, Greg and I worked quite a bit before he became the speaker together on transportation. We were part of that infamous trip to Switzerland, which I paid for out of my own pocket. It just still
FYI.
Drives me nuts. So I like Greg. He's a good man. He really is.
Passionate.
Yeah. And President Niederhauser. So Wayne, I actually grew up just down the road from Wayne, so I've known him for quite some time. He's good friends with my parents, and he's been a bit of a mentor, and I'm going to miss him. He's he's always reasonable, just very level-headed. So you go in all fired up, and then he'll help you see both sides of things and then walk you off the cliff. So
yeah,
that's crazy.
The president is definitely someone who's very – he's very calming, but you know what? He always listens, and he's a team player. It didn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican.
That's right.
In regards to the speaker, he always tells me I love that we love to fight, and he and I are like brother and sister at times. We definitely both are passionate people, and we'll have our little spats, but then we'll have a conversation after, and we'll be okay the next day.
Yeah, interesting. I have a column. I write two columns a month for the Deseret News. I have a column in tomorrow that deals with the two of them and basically says that they were great compliments to one another.
Yeah, I would
so
agree.
One being the street fighter, the other being the diplomat, you know, one being emotion, one being logic. I don't know, one being sort of zeal and the other being just deliberate, and that it got something good done.
Maybe that's a little a good metaphor for how the House and the Senate work together, too.
Normally, you'd be having someone who's been in both.
Yeah.
Time to go to gripes. Angela, let's go to you first. What do you want to gripe about?
I am Representative Angela Romero. I am not Representative Chavez Houck. I am not Senator Luz Escamilla. We are totally three different people living in three different homes.
Represent different constituencies.
Represent different constituencies and different districts. And we're different in age range as well. And I'm taller than both of them.
Well said. Senator Andereg.
You know, I've brought bills for the last 2 years that I would love to change the process, change how we, you know, we'll pass 50% of our bills in the final 3 days.
Wow.
The final three days.
And about how many
days.
Is that?
Well, we passed 534 bills, so we're talking 270-something, I would imagine, 260-something.
Wow.
So, you know, for me, I would like to see us use the interim studies, the interim committees for passing more of those bills, limit us to like 3 or 4 priority bills, and that's all you get. And everything else has to go through the interim so that the first 2 to 3 weeks were spent passing interim bills that got approval.
Incredibly well vetted.
Yeah. And stop the horse trading.
Yeah, I agree because, again, my bill that didn't pass 165, the jail release on domestic violence, we worked on that during the interim. And that was an interim bill, and it still got stuck on the calendar, and it's unfortunate because the people that lose out are women that are victims of domestic violence.
Yeah.
Well, my gripe is just going to be that Jim and Dan are not here and whatever they're doing, but I know Jim is in Mexico having guacamole and, you know, churros and doing whatever he does. And I don't know. He lives a good life. The guy has a lot of fun. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I've been joined by Senator Anderegg and Representative Romero. The program is produced by Emily Means. Thanks for listening.